go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Everybody in the chat room. Dadgummit. I'm on time. Sheesh. Hello. Yeah, the chat room's stone empty. Something broke somewhere. We seem to be... wait a minute. We're not broadcasting. There we go. All right, we're broadcasting now. That's a happy thing. Sometimes Bob misses a button. That does not explain the fact that there's nobody in the daggum chat room. Listen to me. I'm turning into an egomaniac. Next thing you know, I'll be talking about I'm broadcasting with half my brain tied behind my back or sending the maid out with a cigar box with $50,000 in it, hoping she'll come back with $50,000 worth of street OxyContin. Oh, it's a bad thing, I tell you. A bad thing. But it's been a pretty good day. Feeling pretty good. A little programming warning for you. I have a follow-up doctor's appointment tomorrow afternoon, and these things have a way of becoming time-consuming. You know how it is. People visiting doctor's offices are called patients for a reason, because you have to be patient. Oh, goody. Grateful spirits in the room. Thank you. I feel much less alone now. So there's possibility I may not get to the mic tomorrow night. If I wind up stuck at the doctor's office too long. Just say it. And I wanted to point out something else that's really, really exciting. You know, I closed the program on Thursday noting that we were far, far behind on our fundraising for the second week of January. And saying that I was sincerely in hopes that we would not wind up starting the year 2011 in a hole quite so quickly. And wow, did you guys respond. You're wonderful. I want to thank everybody who stepped up the way you did, because people got really, really in earnest over the weekend and into last night. And not only did you take care of week one and two's fundraising, you took care of week three, too. Dig it, we are in we've begun week three, and it's done. We are only $450 away from making the fundraising goal for what it takes to keep the horn on the air for a month. We are within $450 of actually finishing January ahead of schedule. And, of course, we're talking about the nifty 250, the thrifty 250, because it takes 250 people. This is just the average. It takes 250 people giving $10 per month in order to see us clear for any given month. And we've had a bunch of people step up and cover one slot, cover two slots. Some people have covered 12 slots. Some people have covered five slots. It has been nothing short of amazing. And I want to thank you for that, because, you know, here a week from Friday, we're bugging out, and really, it's a vacation. It's the first time since I have been on the air, since we created the horn, that I can say that I am honest to God going on a vacation. And to be able to go on a vacation and know that January's bills were paid, and hopefully we'll get a real good start on February, that would make the vacationing significantly easier. I'm not talking about funding the vacation. That was generously and kindly taken care of by an anonymous listener who wishes to remain anonymous, and for whom we are very, very grateful. But just in terms of meeting the fundraising goals for the month, you know, the fundraising goal is $2,500. We are at $2,050. We are $450 away from having January taken care of. Wow. Huh. So that means we need 45 members of 45 folks to step up and be part of the Thrifty 250. Remember the math. When you do the math, $10 a month for the program works out to something less than 5 cents per hour of programming. That's pretty amazing. I don't know a lot of people out there working for less than 5 cents an hour. But you know what? If you listen to the State of the Union tonight, which we will do, give it a year or so, and by God, we all may be working for less than 5 cents an hour. Did you catch this? I've just got some sort of random little bits and pieces, flotsam and jetsam, evidence of a profoundly dysfunctional culture. And what, Texas Betsy? Bob, you paying us in nickel? No, no, no. Nobody gets paid. That's the beautiful thing. And everybody has a share. It's just like Catch-22. Next up, chocolate-covered cotton. I got the, Sandra sent this story along earlier today, just with a, Bob, what, why, question. And frankly, I have no viable answer. Because it doesn't make any sense to me either. And I've got an email here, that deserves going into as well. An email that came in from our buddy Ron in Raleigh that I think needs a good reading, because it all, like I said, I've got this little stack of stories here, and they all seem wholly, utterly disconnected and disparate. But in a way, I think by the time we're done with them, they're not going to look as disparate as they may quite possibly seem to be. I think they're going to make more sense than any of us thought they would have. At least that was my guess as I was looking over them and just sort of seeing how things shook out. But like I said, give it a little while. And we all may be working for less than 5 cents an hour. It ain't pretty. It's downright disturbing. What do I mean by that? Well, again, this is from the article that Sandra sent along in regard to the State of the Union tonight. You know, the advance copies of the script of the speech have by now gone out to all and sundry. Headline, official, this is from the Associated Press. Official, Obama to call for 5-year spending freeze. A White House official says President Barack Obama will call for a 5-year freeze in non-security discretionary spending during his State of the Union address. The official says the proposal will be part of the president's plans to reduce the deficit that he will outline in Tuesday's primetime address. The official says Obama will also call for lawmakers to back a 5-year plan put forth by Defense Secretary Robert Gates to save $78 billion in defense spending. the article says Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. Several Republican lawmakers have proposed cutting $100 billion from Obama's budget for the current year. The official spoke on the condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to speak publicly ahead of the president's speech. Back up. Or back the heck up. There's a sentence there that's... bothersome. Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. Simple sentence. Seems like one, doesn't it? No. Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. Since when did the booger-eating, birther, deather, tenther, the 14ther, house helmet-wearing, oatmeal-drooling, knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, right-wing teabaggers become the public? Because you know what? I don't know of any liberals out there, I don't know of any progressives out there, who are saying, oh, Jesus, we're spending too much! Because we recognize that the way that the United States got out of the Great Depression was by spending. Government spending. The reason the Great Depression recovery hiccuped in 1937 was because Franklin Delano Roosevelt sort of bowed to the screaming and squealing and oinking of the moneyed class to engage in austerity measures. Now, did I hear this right today? That the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed its first 100-point gain day yesterday? And that it was starting trading today at something just barely short of 12,000. Where was it when Dim Leader left office? Just asking? Yeah, I thought so. Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. See, this is a very, very bad not journalism sentence in something that is supposed to be passed off as journalism as it comes from the Associated Press. This is a so-called straight news story by one Julie Pace. Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. Let's send Julie back to J school. Better yet, let's send Julie back to English class. Because we're missing a word here. And in this case, the use of the word does not represent a bowing and scraping to the Fox News style manual. It would be entirely appropriate in this sentence to say Obama is under pressure from some of the public, or it would be even more appropriate to say Obama is under pressure from a minority of the public and some lawmakers to cut spending. You might even include a sentence after that saying many people in the United States think that the solution to the economic problems of the United States involve increasing government spending. Or you might say, contrary to these worries that the Republicans have about spending today, just a few years ago they were told by their leader, Count Dicula, that deficits don't matter anymore. Bad, bad journalism. And the disturbing thing about this is that this may have been picked up all over the country for morning editions of various and sundry print newspapers. It was certainly picked up by Yahoo News. Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. It makes it sound like there's people outside the White House with pitchforks and torches who aren't there. Now, there is a very, very definite line between opinion journalism, or opinionism, and real journalism. Opinion is, I think this is how it is because bleh. It is clearly opinion-driven. Fact journalism, journalism, has to do with reporting who, what, when, where, why, how, and occasionally how much. And in this case, the explanation for a five-year spending freeze has to do, the why part of the question has to do with, is answered by the statement, Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. But that is not an honest answer to the question, why? That is a right-wing dominated media and messaging answer to why. And it stinks. It absolutely stinks unto the nostrils of the Most High. Because it isn't true. It is offered as a blanket statement of uniformity when that uniformity, in fact, does not exist, and in fact does not even exist as a majority in this country. But that apparently did not stop Julie Pace from writing it at 12:38 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Associated Press. This has the potential, a spending freeze for 5 years, to be a real kick in the guts to any kind of recovery that's out there. And of course, bear in mind, most of the recovery has been on Wall Street. Witness that, you know, just short of 12,000 business. It hasn't been, as the saying goes, on Main Street. Which reminds me of an email that I got from Ron in Raleigh earlier. The email was simply titled, Talking Points. Ron in Raleigh says, as I was getting ready for my eighth straight day of work, I was listening to NPR. It's either that or some zoo crew. Hey, we got a little trouble out on the freeway around Raleigh. It's cold out there. Better put on your jacket today. Hey, we've got a remote going on down at the car lot later. There's a lot going on down there. You know, professional broadcasting. It was either NPR or, as Ron notes, some zoo crew. The Morning Edition host, Ron notes, was interviewing the CEO of Dow Chemical, Better Living Through Chemistry. One thing the CEO of Dow Chemical said stuck in my head, says Ron, because I'd heard it before. The CEO said that the main reason large multinationals are not hiring is because of uncertainty. Uncertainty about tax policy, health care policy, etc., etc., etc. I am thinking this Moses shall have been a fool. Mrs. Anna, take a letter to Abraham Lincoln. Sorry, wrong play. Multinationals are not hiring because of uncertainty. Uncertainty about tax policy, health care policy, yada, 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 the price of rice in China, yada, yada. Ron says, the thing that struck me was on the way home this afternoon, the All Things Considered guy, host, was interviewing two small business owners. And they both said the reason they're not hiring was because of, come on everybody, play the Jeopardy theme. Na 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 na. What is uncertainty, Alex? You are correct. Ron says, the question I would like addressed is, when have businesses ever known the future? When have they ever had a crystal ball, if I may add? As a business person, says Ron, you deal with the taxes and other things as they exist today. This talking point seems to be a one-size-fits-all talking point, and it is bullshit whoever uses it. The Dow Chemical CEO was a particularly annoying asshole who has written a book about manufacturing in America. Ron says, as usual, pass this steaming pile on to Sandra. Thank you, Ron. There's more actual content and meat in Ron's email than there was in Julie Pace's AP story. And there's, it's, you know, there's a little, you know, there's a little of this meat and a little of that meat, you know. little inside meat, little outside with the brown charred bits, the really crunchy good stuff, burnt ends and so forth. There's tonight's barbecue reference. God, I hope someday I can eat barbecue again. Oh, sorry. So easily damn distracted. No, there's a lot of meat in what Ron has to say. And let me answer the question. Does that strike you as odd? Because I read it and went, oh, Jeebus, this is precious. This is another one of those little microcosmic moments where you realize how far ahead of the messaging game the right wing is. Because understand, when you're booking the stories, now back in the day, this is, okay, I'm not going to get out my pipe and slippers or anything. But back in the day, when I was just a young cub reporting liberal at CNN Radio, part of my job, I anchored newscasts, and then another part of the week, I spent on the phone all day long dialing people up and getting reactions and cutting sound audio for use inside radio news broadcasts. The ubiquitous 20-second soundbite, 15-second soundbite. Okay? Apparently those days are gone, or at least partially gone. Because the way you wind up having the CEO of Dow Chemical telling you that businesses, multinational giant corporations aren't hiring Rex because of uncertainty in the marketplace. And then, 8 hours later, you've got a couple of goober small business owners saying, well, Humphrey, we ain't hiring because of uncertainty in the marketplace. You know how you do that? You know how that, because it doesn't just happen. This is not a boating accident. This happens because out there in right-wing world, there are PR flacks, just like the ones I've told you about from time to time. And their job is to get the right-wing's message out there. Just as the right-wing's messaging sort of surreptitiously crept into Julie Pace's work at the Associated Press, Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending, even though, no, it's not uniform like you wrote it, Miss Julie. Well, the same thing apparently happened at NPR today when Ron was listening. Because some right-wing flack out there is writing to producers at NPR, breaking, businesses aren't hiring because of uncertainty. Your guest in Eastern Time Zone. I see them every day. I virtually never see pitches for our side's ideas. But that is how those things develop. And it is how a White House gets convinced that the American people want to see spending frozen. Because that deficit, by God, our grandchildren's got a deficit now. And I don't want to have a, it's being born with a deficit. Only problem is, Cletus, your grandchildren were being born with deficits about March of 2001. That's when your grandchildren started being born with deficits, and then they started being born with real serious Jed Clampett walking around folding money deficits after about March of 2003 when George Bush decided to put a war on the credit card. Because that's what he did. And from then on out, it was deficit city, baby. But the Republicans, the same ones that Julie Pace sort of offhandedly refers to without attribution or reference in her AP news story, yeah, the same people that are worried about deficit spending now, and we got to rein in the deficit. Those people were quiet. They were as quiet as a graven image. While the biggest part of the deficit was being run up. And that's part of the reason that I despise them so. Our buddy Matt Osborne over at OsborneInc.com has a post every morning called The Morning Awful. And this was this morning's Morning Awful. Matt made reference to the story that notes a study that followed several thousand undergraduates through 4 years of college and found that large numbers of them didn't learn critical thinking, complex reasoning, and written communication skills during 4 years of college. Many of the students graduated without knowing how to sift fact from opinion, make a clear written argument, or objectively review conflicting reports of a situation or event. They also didn't know how to respond without being swayed by emotional testimony and political spin. And bless his heart, Matt, who is mighty quick on the fly, came to a quick conclusion. I imagine it must have just hit him like a lightning bolt out of the blue. Crap! You know, one of those. Holy, oh my! Because in his Morning Awful today, Matt Osborne asked the question after looking at the data as divulged by this story, and says, about 36% of college students haven't improved after 4 years. Now think back to almost a year ago, when CNN polling discovered that 3 out of 4 tea baggers, tea party activists, had attended college. And here's where that razor sharp wit and that steel trap mind come into play. Matt says, in all likelihood, these are the same people. These are the same people. And you know what? I think he's probably right. You remember last night on the program when David from Maine and I were talking and he was talking about it? He said, you know, do you know one of those people who can never, ever, ever take responsibility for his own actions? Not at all, ever, not once. There's always somebody else's fault at work. And I acknowledged it and I said, you know, that I was the exact opposite of that. Whenever something goes sideways, that I tended to look to myself first before looking for external causation. And as I offered at the time, that's because if I have screwed something up, then I have the power, hopefully, to fix it. Which means that the problem is significantly less complex than if I am merely a cork bobbing on the ocean, storm tossed by consequence and circumstance, and an unwitting actor merely playing the role of passive fool in some grand universal farce. I don't think I said it quite like that last night, but that captures the sense. Well, this is that. You know, I went to college, and I learned about the economic and socio-political ramifications of Little Red Riding Hood, you know, that academic stuff. I learned why it is that I really do despise the novel Ethan Frome. A sled? You're really going to commit suicide with a sled? Please. Why, to this day, it feels like needles going into my eyeballs to try to read either of the Bronte sisters. Why I am convinced that Charles Dickens was paid by the word, and hence you get 19 paragraphs of close descriptions of a leaf. I learned a lot of meaningless crap in college. but I learned a lot of really meaningful stuff, too. And I was taught how to analyze and how to dig through and how to sort out. Because I guess I just had the good fortune, and, you know, I had 2 years in a private college, and then I had 2 years in a public college, so I got the best of both worlds. And I was taught by professors who were real they could spot a BS artist from a mile away and did not mind telling you if you were one. And if you wrote something that was crap, to hand it back to you and say, oh, Bob, this is crap. If you can't do any better, I'll go ahead and give you the D, but, you know. I had a professor once who said, you ever notice? He said, because I have. When grades come out, if a student gets an A, he says, I got an A. But if he gets a D, it becomes, Professor Ratbastard gave me a D. Pointing out the fact that we tend to think we've earned the good things in life, but the bad things in life have somehow been thrust upon us. Well, this is the world out of which a significant number of students are coming and apparently becoming teabaggers. Because they can't sift fact from opinion. They can't make a clear written argument. They can't make a clear written sign. And they can't objectively review conflicting reports of a situation or event. And they don't know how to respond to a given circumstance without being swayed by emotional testimony and political spin. This is America in the year 2011. And I know not how you would describe it, but I call it scary. And so that is that little hunk of demographic that apparently Julie Pace of the Associated Press is referring to when she says, Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending. Do tell, Julie. Do tell. But there's more. There are other little disparate moments in the American dystopia. This evening. There's Newt Gingrich, for instance. Yeah, I know. That goes over like a punch bowl. You know, I told you last week about a significant little victory we had here in the hills when, for the first time, the Environmental Protection Agency stepped forward and actually vetoed a permit for a massive mountaintop removal job. And they did so because they found, applying science to the situation, not opinion, or not emotions, but factual-based science, they found that it would be impossible for the coal company to run that extraction complex without forever damaging and destroying a big old vital chunk of ecosystem upon which humans live in southern West Virginia. That, of course, prompted the not quite really governor of West Virginia, Earl Ray Tomlin, to declare that he issued a call to arms to the Friends of Coal to come down and rally in Charleston last Thursday. And they did, and they hooted, and they hollered. Fortunately, none of the hardest-working, bravest people I know, my colleagues at Cold River Mountain Watch, none of them were hurt. But they, by God, showed their bravery. They showed up, and they made sure that people understood that there are facts about coal, and that the Friends of Coal aren't involved with any facts. So along comes Newt Gingrich, who has apparently decided that my family and I and my friends and my neighbors and my colleagues and my fellow West Virginians and fellow Appalachians in southwestern Virginia and eastern Kentucky and eastern Tennessee, that we don't have what Republicans like to fondly refer to as a right to life. Nope. Newt Gingrich and his cadre of Newtsies have decided that they, and this is a big thing. Remember, he's thinking about being president, so he's got to keep up with the Joneses, or in this case, the Randians, the Rand Paulians, the Aqua Buddhists, and find him something in the federal government to abolish. Well, guess what he wants to abolish? No. Tell you what. Don't guess. What in the hell is... Okay, good. Now, guess what he wants to abolish? Yeah, I think you can figure it out.
So, I want to pose one of the things we are working on at American Solutions, and Steve Eberle, who's here, is at the American Solutions booth behind you, is working on this, is to develop an environmental solutions agency to replace the Environmental Protection Agency.
Is this where we clap, Marvelline?
An environmental solutions agency would get up every morning and say, yes, you can do that, if... And then they would set standards we have to meet, and they'd go out and try to find incentives to meet the standards. The Environmental Protection Agency gets up every morning and say, no, you can't do that because... And they are really, in many ways, hostile to all new technology, hostile to local community control, hostile to the business community, hostile to the marketplace.
Yeah, hostile to the marketplace. Yeah, right, Newt, right. Why don't you go marry somebody? Because, you see, it was literally the first time in history that the Environmental Protection Agency had used the powers that were available to it to stop this monster coal extraction complex. They had sat idly by as acre after acre and mile after thousands of miles of streams and mountains after hundreds of mountains had been blown asunder. Well, they did precisely nothing. But finally, with the imprimatur of permission from the President of the United States, Barack Obama, they looked at this nightmare horror called Spruce Mine Number 1, and they stopped it. They said no. And they didn't say no because they were hostile to new technology. They said no because they are receptive to science. They didn't say no because they're hostile to local communities. They said no because they are receptive to the idea of local communities continuing to exist. They did not say no because they're hostile to the marketplace. They said no because they are receptive to the idea that places like Appalachia get to be a marketplace instead of being blown off the map. Newt, you damned idiot. Instead, he wants to replace the EPA with an environmental solutions agency that'll say, yes, you can! Hey, is it all right if we blow up 2,300 acres of Appalachian rainforest, temperate rainforest, in the oldest mountains in the world? Is it okay if we blow that up and bury about 9 miles of streams and dump a few tons of poison into the people's bodies that live around there and make sure it ain't a fit place for man or beast for the next 100,000 years? Yes, you can! God damn you, Newt! Why don't you come live here? Why don't you drink some of the water, you crazy old coot? Why don't you do that? Have some sludge, Newt! Let's see how long your liver and your kidneys and your gallbladder and your pancreas and your spleen and the rest of your innards can take it, Newt! Ah, no cheating, no bottled water, baby! You drill a well down into the water table that some of that free market capitalism has poisoned over the last 100 years. And drink deep, Newt. Drink deep, you dirty son of a bitch. Drink deep. But you know what? If they can't screw you, if they can't screw you where you live, they'll screw you at the drive-thru. You know how all that regulation's bad for business? You know how them lawyers is ruining America? Well, there's a lawsuit out there been filed. It's been filed, of all places, in the state of Alabama. It has been filed against Taco Bell and I suppose its parent corporation, Yum Brands. Yum Brands. Damn, if that's not a case of deceptive advertising, I've never heard one. Yum Brands. Taco Bell's owned by Yum, isn't it? Everywhere you see a Taco Bell, you see a Kentucky Fried Chicken, and Kentucky Fried Chicken's owned by Yum. The lawsuit has to do with something that Taco Hell uses, and this really is food porn because it's nasty. You know, these are all just the little symptoms of dysfunction that sort of dot the landscape as we wait here before President Obama tells us that our problem is we're spending too much, the government's spending too much, you know, because he's under pressure from the American people and lawmakers. Fish piss. No, Taco Hell, you know, they won't tell you that what's in their tacos is ground beef. Well, if you ask them, oh, yeah, it's ground beef. Not how they advertise it, though. You ever notice? I don't know. Watch one. Taco Bell commercial. There's usually, if you know, for a long time, there was a little chihuahua dog in it going, yo quiero Taco Bell. I wondered if it was, you know, if the dog had friends or former friends. Jesus, Fido, not you. Oh, they got Fido. He's a gordita now. No, that stuff that goes into your taco and your Mexican pizza and your enchilito. Yeah, that ain't ground beef. Because you see, one of those business-stifling, government-regulating agencies has established standards for what has to be in something that you call beef. Beef, just not ground beef. The United States Department of Agriculture defines beef as flesh of cattle. They go on to define ground beef. Yeah, the vegetarians and the vegans can, like, walk away for a little bit. This is probably going to gross you out. Yeah, meat talk. Ground beef is defined by the United States Department of Agriculture, and I would submit liberally defined, as chopped fresh and or frozen beef with or without seasoning and without the addition of beef fat as such, and it shall contain not more than 30% fat and shall not contain added water, phosphates, binders, or extenders. So that means Taco Bell is out for being able to use the term beef. Okay, it's not beef. Maybe it's, let's see, what would be another good term for this? Meat filling. Meat taco filling. Maybe that's what they should call it. Meat taco filling. Well, there's a problem there. Meat taco filling also has a real live, honest to Jesus definition. Meat taco filling is defined as requiring the presence of at least 40% fresh meat. And guess what? if you happen to work at Taco Hell and you're getting the goop ready for the day and you go back to the refrigerator, that's what you pull out. You pull out a bag of taco meat filling. Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Taco meat filling. Yum, yum. Under tooled leather. There's only one problem. They bill it as taco meat filling, but it ain't. You want to... No, you don't, but I'm going to anyway. You want to hear what's in your Taco Hell taco? And see, this is where they get you. And they've gotten me this way. Because, you know, maybe it's been a long day. Maybe you're tired, you're hungry, you're short on cash. You've been at it all day. You don't want to go home and cook. And so before you head up the mountain, you stop at that last little outpost, and it happens to have one of those built in with a gas station Taco Hells in it. And you think, okay, I'll have two crunchy tacos and two burritos. And then you eat it. And then, as Rosanna Dana, peace be upon her, and may she rest in peace, might have said, you feel like you're gonna die. I mean sick. Well, that's because it's not good and not good for you. Taco Bell taco meat filling cannot even meet the de minimis standards for USDA taco meat filling. Caramel color and natural smoke flavor added. That's because the guys working at the processing plant were sitting around smoking a couple of Territons while they were filling the bags. Natural smoke flavor added. Ingredients of Taco Bell taco meat filling. Scott, Linda, leave the room. Scott and Linda have dinner with us every night. Ingredients of Taco Bell taco meat filling. Beef, water, isolated oat product. See, it's isolated oat product. They can't even call it oats because it's had so much crap done to it. It's isolated oat product. Hey, oats, go stand in the corner. You're isolated. Beef, water, isolated oat product, salt, chili pepper, onion powder, tomato powder, oats, paren wheat, what? Is that mathematical? Is that like oats multiplied by the finished product of whatever's between the parentheses, which happens to be wheat? Soy lecithin, sugar, spices, maltodextrin, which parenthetically they inform you is a polysaccharide that is absorbed as glucose. Maltodextrin, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, is the dry form of high fructose corn sweetener. Soybean oil, paren, it's an anti-dusting agent. They don't want their taco meat filling to get all dusty. Garlic powder. Autolyzed yeast extract. Is that Vegemite? I don't know. Citric acid. Caramel color. Cocoa powder. Well, how do you... It's mole. Yeah, that's what it is. It's mole. It's got chocolate in it. Silicon dioxide. That would be SiO2, wouldn't it? Oh, that's an anti-caking agent. Natural flavors. That's the one that always throws me. We've been through tomato powder, onion powder, chili pepper, salt, and garlic powder, and still we get natural flavors. Yeast, not the autolyzed yeast extract above. This is yeast, I guess. Modified cornstarch. From what to what? Who knows? Natural smoke flavor. There's our boys standing around the loading dock, honking on a couple of Territons. I'd rather fight than switch. Salt. Wait, salt was already up there. Well, Hubie threw in a little extra. Sodium phosphate and less than 2% of beef broth, which I guess means beef broth wasn't the natural flavor and we're fast running out of other candidates, potassium phosphate and potassium lactate. I didn't know potassium could lactate, and I hate to think about how they milk the potassium to get it into the Taco Bell taco meat filling. Here's the rub, though. To be taco meat filling, the USDA says quite unequivocally that it has to have at least 40% meat in it. But it doesn't. That's Taco Bell taco meat filling is only 36% beef. And by beef, understand we are operating on only the barest, most liberal definition thereof. Since it is all pre-cooked, it could be downer cow. It could, in fact, be mad cow. It could be cow parts that you wouldn't put in potted meat or Vienna sausage. But what it ain't, taco meat filling, is 40% meat. The USDA says that any food labeled as taco meat taco filling should have at least 40% fresh meat. Aha! There it is! There's the rub! It is not meat taco filling. On the Taco Bell label, it is taco meat filling. See? See? But whatever it is, it has no more than 36% actual Ron and Raleigh says, I know what it is. It's BERF. I want some BERF. Organic free-range BERF. Marty says, Del Taco from now on. No Del Taco here. Fortunately for us, we have a very dear friend who runs a real Mexican restaurant. He's a real El Salvadoran running it. And I have no qualms whatsoever about going in there and ever receiving, Jesus, what was that word again? Isolated oat product. It's taco haggis. That's what it is. It's taco haggis. Aren't there a lot of oats in haggis? And spleen? Oh, I nearly coughed my spleen out. Just little pictures from the dystopia that is, in fact, America. And one more. You know, I've said on this program from time to time that it frustrates me when I see people talking about the goons from Westboro Baptist Church and how they're extremists. And they're not really Christians. Because the same thing that the Christians from Westboro Baptist Church do openly, millions of so-called Christians in America do behind closed doors. I got this story earlier today from the greatest LGBT talk radio host who has ever gotten behind a microphone, our good friend Peter Gottbold. All he said in sending the story along was, I don't try to make the distinction anymore. If they claim God, they're Christians. After all, that's the way it works. And so I offer you some Christian love this evening, just to sort of round out the little picture of dystopia. Christian love. Of course, we go for our little dose of Christian love to Georgia. To Carroll County, Georgia.
Georgia?
No, not that Georgia. No, we go to the Georgia of Lester Maddox and Knight Riders and hate and intimidation and terror. Only it's 2011 in America now, in the dystopia that was once known as the United States of America, where in Carroll County, Georgia, a Carroll County man told WSB Channel 2 Action News, WSB Channel 2 Action News team coverage, that he believes he was the target of a hate crime. No, he doesn't believe it, WSB Action News Channel 2. He knows it. How does he know it? Chris Staples said someone threw a rock through his window with a piece of paper attached that was covered in anti-gay slurs. I was watching TV and just finished smoking a cigarette, and I heard this big thud. Boom! Staples told Channel 2's George Howell. There was a rock attached to the note. The rock said, or the note attached to the rock, rocks can't talk. The note attached to the rock said, "We know you're gay, and God hates gays. You won't be raping anybody in the county, and God's gonna make sure you burn in hell." And something about my daddy. My daddy will make sure you burn in hell. It was unsettling, but he still fell asleep. 3 weeks, a few hours later. He woke back up. He woke back up because his bedroom was filled with flames. Chris Staples' mama spoke to the media, but she didn't want to be identified. She said, "We're just lost." She said she heard a commotion and saw a fire coming from her son's house next door. Then she ran to find her son lying in the yard. She said she thought he was dead. The house was black, and all I could see was an orange glow behind my head. Chris Staples said he had to crawl beneath the smoke and barely had the breath to unlock his door to escape. There are no words to describe what happened and how I felt as his mom. Chris Staples is a 40-year-old man. He bothers no one. He minds his own business like Mama taught him. And he just happens to be gay. Chris Staples has been out of the closet for 20 years. He has never had a problem like this before. He's sick, physically ill, he's unable to work, and almost never leaves his house. Captain Shane Taylor of the Carroll County Sheriff's Office said, "That's the first time I've dealt with anything of this nature in 16 years. Carroll County officials continue to investigate the incident as an arson." There's your Christian love. "We know you're gay. God hates gays. You won't be raping anybody in the county, and God's gonna make sure that you burn in hell. My daddy'll make sure you burn in hell." Anybody want to sing? "Onward, Christian soldiers." Yeah. A little creepy, ain't it? No. A lot creepy. No, not creepy. Evil. We are in a constant, dynamic tension with ignorance and evil. Some people in this country can go to college and never learn a blessed thing, and be as unable as the day they entered to engage in critical thought and give more weight to their biases, their hatreds, and their fears and their prejudices than they do to the common humanity that we all share. Some people are sick, stay home by themselves, and manage to wake up as their house burns down around them because the Christians have decided that God hates gays. And again, unlike Peter, trying to make the distinction seems to be a fool's errand at this point. Because the ones that don't talk about it openly talk about it behind people's backs and behind closed doors. You know what? Given the two, I'd rather have the Fred Phelps bunch, because I know that I'm dealing with a monster in them. But you don't know with the behind-the-back crowd, and the, oh, God bless him, he can, you know, he's sensitive. Those are the ones I can do without. So there's our little snapshot for tonight as we go forward into the second hour of the program. We will get live coverage of the president's speech here at some point. I'm going to do that just simply because, you know, it's my job. I got to watch this, so we may as well listen to it together, okay? Can we do that? Why not? But we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. A little reminder, we are only $450 away. Well, $250 away, because a person has stepped up again and filled in 20 of those $10 slots. $250 away, not from being done with the week, but from being done with the month. I don't know when the last time was that we finished out a month before the month itself finished out. We have that chance this evening. $25 people, $10 apiece, and we are done for January, and I don't say another word until February 1st. I think that's kind of cool, don't you? Yes, indeed. So, fire them up if you want to. Smoke them if you got them. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Ice, ice, baby. No, wrong song.
offense, but it don't work. Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.
Something sweet for the troops. Choose from a selection of Bubble Genius bath and body products, and we'll send them to soldiers overseas on your behalf. The holidays are coming up. Buy a soldier a shower.
BubbleGenius.com.
It's Tuesday, January 25, 2011.
Getting gassy at the Oscars. Catastrophic flooding in Sri Lanka. Deep drought in Beijing. Natural disasters are expensive. Plus, the State of the Union.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Our union is strong.
Our union is strong.
It's strong.
It's strong.
The state of our union is strong.
The state of our union is sound.
Well, that's great then. All the presidents agree the state of our union is strong.
And I must say to you that the state of the union is not good.
Well, I guess that's why you're not president anymore, Mr. Ford. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, State of the Union, it's like Oscar Day for political geeks.
Oscar night, prom night, all rolled into one.
It is indeed. What do you have for us today?
Well, more on that in a moment. But first, the United Nations says this week that the record number of natural disasters around the world in 2010 caused $109 billion in economic damages. That's three times more than in 2009. And indeed, the global trend in 2010 toward catastrophic flooding continues into 2011, from the historic flooding that is still making its way through devastated towns in northeastern Australia to Brazil, where over 600 people last week were missing or dead after torrential rains and mudslides, over to Sri Lanka, where the United Nations is now calling for international food aid due to record rainfall that's forcing mass evacuations and destroying crops. Bucking the trend is Beijing, the capital city of China, which hasn't seen rain in over 3 months. Climate scientists say it's part of an unusually strong La Nina weather event in the Pacific, affecting weather patterns around the world.
Yeah, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, that we've had more deaths from natural disasters, many of them based on these extraordinary weather patterns, in the last year than we have seen in the last 40 years from terrorist attacks. Imagine if we put the extraordinary amount of money we're putting into fighting so-called terrorism into doing something about our climate future, improving infrastructure, the number of folks who might still be alive. Hopefully that's something the president will be talking about in the State of the Union.
And as I said, we'll get to that in a moment. It is that time of year.
I'm chomping at the bit. Can you tell?
It is that time of year again. No, not just for the State of the Union, but for Oscar nominations. Topping the list of nominations for Best Documentary this year is Gasland, a searing portrait of the natural gas industry that tells the story of how the natural gas drilling technique of hydraulic fracturing is likely contaminating drinking water supplies around the nation.
Fracking.
That's fracking. And within hours of the nominations announcements on Tuesday, the natural gas industry immediately slammed the Academy of Motion Picture Sciences for nominating Gasland. The industry says it plans a PR campaign to discredit the film.
Of course they do. Just the way they discredited Michael Moore with Sicko. And guess who's going to win? The big corporations, I'm guessing.
Now that we have the really important news out of the way, it's also that time of year for the constitutionally mandated exercise of the State of the Union address. Speculation as to what President Obama will say is rampant, but the overall focus of this year's speech is said to be focused on jobs and the economy and on restoring American competitiveness in this era of globalization. We'll have more on the speech in our next report, but past presidents have had much to say over the last 40 years on moving the nation forward on energy, compiled here by the folks at the Environmental Defense Fund.
And here we have a serious problem. America is addicted to oil.
We will reverse the course of climate change and leave a safer, cleaner planet.
Our critical answer to this problem is energy conservation.
We will ensure that our people and our economy are never again held hostage by the whim of any country or cartel.
Energy will be the immediate test of our ability to unite this nation.
Increasing energy supplies is not enough.
We can no longer afford to consider air and water common property, free to be abused by anyone.
And here's President Obama last year in his first State of the Union address.
Providing incentives for energy efficiency and clean energy are the right thing to do for our future, because the nation that leads the clean energy economy will be the nation that leads the global economy, and America must be that nation.
But action on federal energy policy hasn't even come close to the rhetoric. While the Obama administration has directed more federal money and support toward clean energy research and development projects than ever before, legislatively, it's been a dud.
For more on that and all the stories we didn't get to today, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com, where we are this week celebrating our 7th year of independent, progressive blogging, journalism, troublemaking, and muckraking. Please stop on by and hit that PayPal button in support of true citizen investigative reporting. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Frickin' Frackin' Green News Report, played out today by our friends at Op Critical. Congratulations, Gasland.
Despite documented health risks and environmental impact, hydraulic fracturing is spreading across the globe.
It's amazing. What took Mother Nature millions of years to build can be destroyed in a few hours with a piece of heavy machinery.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, as I've told you before, the horn is in the pocket of Big Soap. We get little care packages from the Bubble Genius ladies from time to time. They are wonderful folks. And, you know, they take great care in the products they produce. And frankly, when you can buy from them and support independent, liberal, progressive business, I don't know why you would ever buy another bar of Irish Spring or Coast or Ivory or Dial or Lava or any of that other hateful, chemical-laden garbage. When you need soap, you go to BubbleGenius.com, and that's what you get. Soap. Soap with a liberal attitude. And a hell of a fine sense of humor, I might add. BubbleGenius.com. It's about 15 minutes past the hour. You guys have been leaving the phones away and leaving the phones alone in droves. You don't want to do this. Let's do. There may still be a blinking light here. Let's see if it is in fact still a person. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey, Susan.
Okay. Your comment about ignorance just struck a chord.
Which one? I'm being facetious. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm sure you've seen this. It's entitled The Unbearable Lightness of Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, God. Yeah, you know, I'm trying to be real good to myself, and I'm eating smart and everything. And she's I'm going to the narcotics tonight, right after the State of the Union ends.
I'm about ready to hit them before the State of the Union. This woman, in case people sit down. You're going to need to be sitting down to hear this. If you haven't heard it already, you're going to need to sit down. Michelle Bachmann, who plans on having her own rebuttal to the State of the Union, has a, shall we say, unique view of history. And this is a quote. I've seen the tape. She claims that that the founding fathers were violently against slavery and worked tirelessly to end it.
Rewind. Rewind. Do it again.
You know, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, 600,000 people died in the Civil War, you know, and I'm going, huh? And that's just, that's not counting all of the slaves who died in servitude before the Civil War broke out.
The average lifespan of an African slave on a southern plantation was, what, 52 years?
If they were lucky.
Right.
Or lucky as the case may be. And this woman is claiming people like Adams and Jefferson and Washington were... Okay, it's true Adams was anti-slavery. But I got news for her. Adams never saw anything close to the abolition of slavery. You know it, I know it, but apparently she doesn't.
No. In fact, back last fall, we covered a story that appeared in the Boston Globe about New England's more or less hidden slave past.
Yeah.
I wonder if batshit crazy Bachmann knows that every time she walks into the Capitol or walks into most of the original public buildings on Capitol Hill, or the White House, or anything like that. That it was built by slaves. I'm guessing the answer is no.
This woman, Keith Olbermann used to have a phrase he used for Sarah Palin. I'm going to transfer it to Michelle Bachmann.
What, that idiot?
This woman is an idiot.
Did you notice, go ahead and get the saucers of milk out because I'm about to get catty. Did you notice that Michelle Bachmann has her a brand new Sarah Palin 2008 presidential campaign haircut? It's all feathery and floating around her face and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Me too.
And I'm going, lady, on the off chance, the very, very small chance you ever end up in the White House, I am running for the Canadian border and claiming refugee status right there on the spot.
Well, you know, I've been doing some research since we're going to go down into the Caribbean. I found out that, and we're actually not leaving the United States for very long. I mean, we're going to be at sea and everything. But we're only stopping in two technically foreign destinations. The first one is our first port of call, and it's Grand Turk, which is the capital island of the Turks and Caicos.
Yeah.
Remember a couple of years ago when we were talking about the appealing idea that Canada had floated the notion of inviting a Caribbean island group in to become part of Canada?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out it was the Turks and Caicos. And I don't know what I've got to do to get our Horn family members in Canada on the line to their various and sundry elected representatives, but I need for that to happen. I need that to happen real bad. Because you know what? I could be all for being a Canadian in the Caribbean. It's just being a Canadian in Canada that I just know. We're expecting somewhere between a half a foot and a foot of snow tonight. And I'm getting real sick of it.
Yeah, well, now you've got to remember, there's Canada, and then there's Canada. The portions of Canada affected by the Humboldt Current, hey, everything's cool.
No, see, you've lived in Oregon too long. If I have to wear more than a t-shirt and shorts in July, it's too cold. Even though I've got funky little bird legs, that's just how I am.
I was raised in Seattle, honey.
Right. So, like, being constantly rained on is normal to you.
Well, you live in a temperate rainforest. It ought to be normal for you, too.
But it doesn't do it all the time for an entire portion of a year.
Well, it didn't for...
For the last couple of years, it just snows. God, if I wanted this, I'd be in Wisconsin. Or Canada. Now, I am not... Let's get something clear real quick. I am not gooning on Canada. I love Canada and Canadians, with the exception of the Red Green Show. That damn thing's been off the air for 5 or 6 years, and West Virginia Public Television is running reruns of it. I don't know what's... I think it comes on right before Lawrence Welk, who's been dead since the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who's programming West Virginia Public Television. That's another one on the list of the I got to have a long talk with them. But you know, if we could convince the Canadian government to invite the Turks and Caicos to come and be part of Canada, I would learn O Canada overnight and be singing it in a Speedo.
Well, the problem with the problem, you see, you're not taking into account is two things. One, hurricanes, and two, Bob, you're going to fry.
That's what zinc oxide is for. That's what those funky shirts from Columbia that are UV protectant all by them, their lonesomes, are for. And as far as frying is concerned, I'll take the position of the guy in the furnace in the cremation of Sam McGee and say it's the first time I've been warm since I got here.
I can see your point.
You know how bad it is? You know how bad it is, Susan? I was checking average temperatures for Grand Turk Island a couple of nights ago because Agnes asked me. She said, it really is going to be warm, Bob? Really? Tell me it's going to be warm. You know, it's kind of like, tell me about the rabbits, George. And I look, 73 degrees is the average February, the average February temperature in Grand Turk. She says, that's not that warm. And I just said, oh, stop it and get back under the electric blanket. My God, Agnes will probably take a parka to the Caribbean.
I'll have a talk with her. I have another question.
Okay.
Could somebody please, I don't expect this, you know, you to answer this, but can somebody please explain to me why MSNBC allowed Oberman to go, whether he was pushed out or whether or not he it was neutral or whatever, you know, ramification there was. And they kept Buchanan?
It's an issue. It's a matter of contracts.
Buchanan? Oh, come on.
No, no. Well, it's contracts. This had to do specifically with Keith's contract and no one else's. And secondarily, remember, Pat Buchanan is the beneficiary of the political get-out-of-jail-free card, I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. If he wants to show up in a brown shirt and down at heels boots and goose step all over Chris Matthews, it's okay by the management.
That's true. You know, it's just like what's his face in the morning. I don't watch him, but I've never watched him. But I'm sure that if he showed up with another dead woman, you know, no big problem. I'm sure that's catty of me, but it's probably the truth.
Well, it probably is. And I think, consequently, it isn't catty.
Meow!
Meow! Table of saucer of milk for Susan in the corner. Be careful or we'll have to isolate you like those modified oat products.
Oh, and by the way, speaking of, it can't be haggis.
Well, because it's not in a bladder or something.
No, haggis is mutton.
Well, true, but I was referring to the oats. There's a lot of oats in haggis.
Yeah, I know, but you got to have mutton.
It's value menu haggis.
That's a possibility.
I saw a rerun of No Reservations, Tony Bourdain, last night, and it was the England-Scotland episode, and he referred to Scotland being the absolute reigning king home of anything. You know, the Scots will deep-fry anything. And to prove it, he ate some deep-fried haggis. Batter-dipped and deep-fried.
The Scots will basically, because of their land, will basically eat anything that doesn't eat them first.
Yeah, what's that line? The English feed their horses what the Scottish feed each other. Yeah. And yeah. The Scots breed fine people, and the English breed fine horses.
Yeah, that's just about it. And you and I both know where we came from, don't we?
And we do.
Clan McKee.
Yeah. You know, the problem is that my tartan is mostly green and with little orange stripes through it, and it looks like hell on my pale form.
Well, I haven't been able to find mine because my my clan was such an obscure sect of it's not the Frasers. Oh God, what was it?
Oh, by the way, while you're thinking of the clan. The other fun thing that Michelle Bachmann has been trotting out, and you know that she, mm-hmm. if you recall the U2 boat episode.
Oh yeah.
It was a U2 boat. She recycles her material, so I wouldn't be surprised to hear this tonight either.
Oh no!
She recycles her material, and what she's been trotting out lately is. When my forebears came from Norwegia, no, I know, it's Norway. I don't want the emails. When my forebears came from Norwegia, They didn't come looking for a handout. The only problem is, that's precisely why the immigrants came. Free effing land.
Exactly.
And by the way, the Bachman clan, they are, they have been the recipients of about $250,000 in handout money, you know, government welfare.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just...
It's one of those moments when I just wish God was real.
Yeah, and
I mean, you know, the real Zeus-y, Thor-y kind of angry, angry juvenile delinquent that exists in the Old Testament. Just so, wait a minute, here. Lick his thumb and, you know, because I want to take the haze off the end of the lightning bolt, all Gary Cooper-like, and just, and nothing but a little charcoal smudge left of Michelle.
Mm-hmm. I would prefer.
Because if that was really real, she would be, pining for the fjords, shall we say.
Yeah. What gets me about Bachman and her little revisionist history, she left out the entire slavery thing. She left out the part in the Constitution, where it's literally written into the Constitution, that slaves were 3/5 of a person. She left out the various and sundry compromises that, you know, where we went.
But you know what's funny? She hired Fat Tony Scalia to come and lecture right wingers in the Congress.
And you would think Fat Tony would have said, "Hey, stupid."
No, Fat Tony did. That's the funny thing.
God, it just.
They asked him about earmarks, and he told them earmarks are fine. He put Tentherism right down the toilet, and then let's see, what was his name? Freshman Representative Joe Walsh. You know, life's been good to me so far. No, not that Joe Walsh. He flushed states' rights down the toilet. I don't like Fat Tony, but I would have paid to have been a fly on the wall for that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would have paid money for tickets for that one. But she also, you know, all of the compromises, the machinations of Clay and the whole nine yards, and then she not only ignored that, God, can you imagine ignoring Frederick Douglass?
From her? Yes, I really can. She probably went from George... No. She probably went from George Washington straight to Phyllis Schlafly with no stops in between.
She ignored the 13th through the 15th Amendments, the 16th through the 17th Amendments...
And rights that didn't have a gun in them, yes.
And the... And the Civil Rights Movement, which was the 24th Amendment. Duh. She just junked half the Constitution.
Amazing. Just amazing. Well, strap in. I was wrong. The State of the Union begins at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, which means it starts 6 p.m. out there on the Pacific Coast.
Yep.
So we will actually get a full show in. Susan, it's been wonderful hearing from you. This has been a doozy.
People go read this thing on her. It will blow your mind, and then you will have to go take many, many drugs, which I plan on doing.
I'm going to chew them. Tonight I'm chewing them up for the refreshing burst of flavor.
Yes, I know the feeling. I know the feeling.
Susan, take care, dear.
Okay, bye-bye. Love to Agnes.
Sure thing. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, seriously, Canadians, get busy. Get to work. Turks and Caicos, next province, okay? I promise, I'll become a Canadian when you do. Isn't that cool? I could say, hey, I can do it already. I can do it already. Hey. Cool. Yeah, there goes another stereotype. I'll get hate mail from the Canadian listeners. Sorry. I'm just playing. Seriously, though, State of the Union at 9 o'clock Eastern Time tonight. Hey, welcome to the program.
What, you having a slow day today, boss?
Nah, it's a pleasant one.
Oh, well, that's good. You know, you sound like you're, you know, what do you say, you're going to go back on the drugs in a few hours?
Absolutely. Crunching them this time.
Oh, God. Hey, listen, I was reading that, that hullabaloo, I guess that's Digby.
Yeah.
Sometimes that shit is hilarious, but,
she's good.
Yeah, she was talking about that horrible Luke Russett. Is that for real? Why? I mean, he's horrible, and he's taken seriously, right?
Right, and all he ever had to do was he passed the DNA test, and you're in.
Yeah, the Lucky Sperm Club, right?
Bingo.
Anyway, I've heard him. He just natters on. He says the most inane things in the world. But what I wanted to read you a quote, because he's talking about, they're asking him, well, what do the Republicans want out of the State of the Union? And he just goes on and on about, what the Republicans want. And Digby writes down here, oh, I'm sure the Republicans would also like him to officially repudiate the Democratic agenda and switch parties. It will be interesting to see if he does that. So, you know, it's always good to get validation, you know, out there. She obviously is on her last half a nerve with Obama, too, because that quote is hilarious.
Oh, that's precious.
I mean, it's not funny. It's like, well, don't make a joke of it, because I'm waiting for the big switch.
And that's, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit with Jim toward the end of the program last night, Sandra. And I said, can you just imagine the cataclysm in this country? And Jim said, I don't think there would be one. I said, oh, I think there would be.
He's not, I mean, he won't, he don't need to do it, because the Democratic brand is just so diluted at this point. You know what I'm saying?
Well, D-I-L-U-T-E-D and D-E-L-U-D-E-D.
Well, yes. Isn't that good? Very good, Bob. Shit. Yeah, that's true. Damn it.
I mean, 84% of Democrats approve of the job he's doing?
Well, like I said, I don't really, you know.
And I'm no firebagger. I'm not one of those Jane Hampshire types.
Well, yeah, listen, you guys are killing me with the Hampshire hating. I mean, that poor bitch is getting it from all sides.
Well, have you seen the latest Dodge?
No, I don't. I was too busy laughing at the petition to the, where did she take it?
Quantico Marine Base, when nobody was there to receive it.
You know,
in a car with bum plates and no insurance.
Oh, is that for real?
Yes.
Was she high?
God only knows. But I had a tweet from Matt Osborne earlier today, and you know, Matt's a veteran.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And let's see. Let me see if I can find it here real quick. He tweeted to me privately earlier today. By the way, you have my personal reassurance that military bases are exactly the wrong place to have expired plates. But I guess she couldn't, you know, I guess Cabana Boy couldn't go out and get her plates taken care of for her that day. Rent a car, Jane.
Well, no, that one, you know, I know it's really a name, but that one tweet that you retweeted when dude, I don't know what the dude said, but it was just hilarious that she basically is a spokesperson for any progressive anywhere, any issue. And
yeah, she's the spokesperson for every progressive she ever imagined.
Right. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just think the whole thing is funny because she does fancy herself. You ain't lying about that. You can tell by her post. Just a lot of pomposity going on there.
Oh, and that's, you know, that's just at a distance. The you have to wear like a full lead jacket from the pomposity radiating off of her if you're in the room with her. I mean, she can melt lead.
Oh, God. Listen, I know, you know what, I can't.
And I generally, you know, to be fair, Sandra, I generally don't goon on people just to be gooning on them. And that's not what I'm doing here. But, you know, the Dodge that she set up, that political action committee.
Well, yeah, no, see, that's serious, because wasn't there some a fair amount of money involved?
$250,000?
And it wasn't accounted for, or?
Well, it just never went to any political action.
Okay, well, where did it go?
She was paid as a consultant.
Oh God. Okay, because the other story I thought was really interesting was that woman from Crew is now working for Lanny Davis. I'm like, damn, bitch, you threw. You know, how you go from Crew?
Lanny. Well, no, that's the thing with this latest dodge that she's got going over here. I saw it earlier this morning, you know, big bold letters, donate to the Bradley Manning Advocacy Fund. And let me just put on the brakes full stop right now and say that I am profoundly and have been and remain and will remain profoundly disturbed by the treatment that Bradley Manning is receiving. But I also recognize that Bradley Manning is receiving the treatment that he is receiving inside a country that is profoundly dysfunctional when it comes to our punishment fetish. Remember, the abuses of Abu Ghraib, Sandra, were born inside the American prison system, not in Iraq.
Oh, yeah, no, that's why...
You know, Lindy England and her boyfriend?
Yeah,
they were prison guards in real life in West Virginia and Maryland.
Right, that's when that shit was going down. I'm like, oh, well, we have a prison gulag here way before 9/11, you know, and all the brown people locked up in it can attest to that bullshit.
Yeah, go ask anybody who's ever spent any time and I'm not talking about the county jail or anything. I'm talking about, you know, serious state time. You know, the one where the judge looks at you and says, and shall be committed to the custody of the Department of Corrections for a sentence not less than 1 year nor more than 10 years, and maybe yada, yada, yada. I don't care what state you're in, there ain't no good ones. And they are sadistic, sick, human being warehouses.
Right, and them people in Chicago, they can attest to that, you know, decades of torturing black folks. So, no, exactly.
And so, as I say this, I want it understood on the front end that I have real, profound concerns with the idea of keeping a guy in solitary confinement for 23 hours out of the day and allowing him out to exercise, one, no windows, no lights off, no pillow. I don't know if he's even got a freaking blanket. You know, no connection to the outside world. You know, this is the kind of stuff, you know, this is Cool Hand Luke into the box kind of stuff. And it's awful. And any country that practices that kind of incarceration should be ashamed of itself. But, having said that...
Lifer.
Pardon?
Lifers, you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
It's a comedy, but you know what I'm talking about if you've seen it. Good.
Yes,
Lord,
indeed.
Anyway. It's a legacy of horror, and that continues in this country. So for it to be translated on the progressive cause celeb of the minute, you know where I am with that, just like that shit you sent me today about Olbermann, you know what I mean? The progressives have a tendency to...
Yeah, that one dude who said, I haven't seen so many white liberals go bananas since Conan was canceled by NBC.
Laughing, I thought, oh dear God, you did not send that to me, because that was hilarious.
It was it stopped me in my tracks, but
yeah,
just
and like I told you, I said, because I wasn't talking about Keith Olbermann. It's like, yeah, whatever, but I like him, but yeah,
I like him, I value him, but
I just think that it speaks to the whole blaga palego, and you know, just how, you know, insulated it can get. That's all.
Absolutely, and the fact that, you know, the more the grieving and the mourning and the sense of anger and frustration comes from the fact that we had arguably 3 hours of liberalism on one cable channel, and now we're down to two, and then we'll add in Cenk, and we'll add in Ed Schultz, and call it four on a good day.
Right, but the whole idea that we're so comfortable in the whole mode of internet, MSNBC, and that seems to be the extent of it, and then you wonder why we're all spinning out because we fear that a Democratic president is going to eviscerate Social Security. There's all connections that can be drawn from that.
Oh.
Click and click and click and post, that ain't going to do shit. I'm sorry.
No, you gotta, it's what Judy Bond said, you gotta get your butt out of your seats and your feet into the street.
So, you know, I just think, you know, it saddens me because I'm guilty of it, too. You know, our side is just completely paralyzed. And as much as I'm grateful for the internet just to get my information, you know, it's a double-edged sword, and it's becoming more so every day. I'm finding it.
Well, you know, you and I have mentioned it a couple of times in our conversation, Sandra, but I'm profoundly disturbed by this idea of a business alliance between Apple and Rupert Murdoch, which has not been announced, apparently, because, you know, Steve Jobs took some more sick time. But that's really disturbing because you know, I know a lot of people who are, a lot of liberals, a lot of progressives, who are Apple to the core, pun intended.
Yeah, but Apple is
and this has got to be disturbing. Microsoft. I'm sorry?
Yeah, Apple has, like, apparently replaced Microsoft for the market share. So I don't really care if it's Apple or Google or what. When you start getting that sort of monopolistic type of activity, that's a problem.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And then when you make those kind of corporate alliances with News Corp and the huge booksellers, and then you're telling me as a customer, looky, looky, you can have your Kindle in every format possibly imaginable. Isn't that great? I'm like, yeah, I'm not too sure about that, because if it's not great, then what? You know?
Right, because there's no empirical proof on the front end that it's going to work or not be a net negative. You know, Marty just wrote in from out in your neck of the woods, and, you know, what we're talking about, Apple, you know, Marty is Apple to the core. And he said, you think you're mortified? And, it's sickening for people, and it goes back to that discussion that you and I had about the digital, you know, the digitized literature and digitized print communications.
Well, and also just the whole language of it, like we talked about before, you know, it's supposed to foster this benignness, but to me, it just reeks of neoliberalism, you know, on some levels, because, you know, you're supposed to see this as a democratizing force, but how can it be when it's being carved up by just ginormous mega corporations? You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
There's a contradiction there. Democracy and the thing is, because it's assumed to be a positive, we don't question the geekness of it and that's okay. Why is that okay?
It's okay because we don't question it. You know, it's Idiocracy all over again.
Right.
It's Brondo. It's got what plants crave. What do plants crave? Electrolytes. What's got electrolytes? Brondo.
You know, and it's kind of, I just think that, you know, people need to step back before they, you know, turn everything over to this, I don't know.
The thing that underpins all of this that's more disturbing to me than anything else, Sandra, is this notion of, you know, digital rights management and the concept of non-property ownership. You know, back in the day, we'd go into the record store and we'd come out with a vinyl album, and if we ripped it out of the album, if we ripped it out of the sleeve, kept the sleeve and flung the disc across the parking lot, that was our business because it belonged to us.
Yeah.
But now when you buy an MP3 or whatever, you're only buying a limited license.
Yeah, no, and that's the huge problem. And they keep trying to address that, you know, like, you should be entitled if you buy something, you know, there's a second, third use, you know, that whole consideration, where every time you transfer it, you shouldn't be penalized, which is what these corporations would like for it to happen. Every time you transfer some data that you so-called purchase, like, say, an iTunes, you know, they want you to only be able to have access to it on limited platforms, and after a certain number, they want to have the little lock on it, and that's the end of it.
Right, and it's not just Apple, because, you know, I refuse to purchase a Kindle. A, I don't have the money. I don't have the money to.
Yeah.
And B, there's just something bothersome about it, for the reasons we've previously discussed. But out there, you can download the Kindle software for PC, for Mac, for Android, for iPhone, and it's free. It's free across the board. And I was getting ready to do it, and then I realized something, and I made a little inquiry, and I realized I was correct. Let's say I want to buy, oh, I don't know, a Tony Bourdain book, and I want to read it on my phone. Well, the book will be transferred to the Kindle account on the phone. But if I want to sit back here in the studio and read it on the production machine PC, I got to buy it all over again.
Right, that's what I mean about second use, third use. I mean, it's just sort of like, whereas when I bought my damn 12-inch for DJing, it was like, okay, that's mine. It's done. I could record it, do a MIDI, whatever the hell I wanted with it. You know, same with the book, like we talked about yesterday. You know, there's some serious issues here, and we're supposed to be comfortable with these, and I say it, ginormous, huge multinational corporations, telling me what? Oh, it's okay. Any Web 2.0 device and innovation, all my iTunes will carry over it, everything, I'm supposed to trust this shit? And you ever seen iTunes? You trying to download how big that piece of shit is?
It's huge.
I'm going off on iTunes, but I'm not that blown over. You see what I'm saying? And if they want to do that with books, too, oh, no.
And yet it's being touted as the solution to the crumbling print newspaper journalism model.
Well, yeah, but it's helping to crumble it along. Like I told you, I said that there's a huge issue with allowing the print industry and the newspaper book to just sort of flounder and flounder like this. It's a real risk for us.
And, you know, again, maybe it's just because of how old, you know, my age, but I like books. I've got a book of, it's some sort of Shakespeare biography here. Agnes brought it home for me. And there's this, and you know, she just found it at the public library for giveaway. Because it had been donated as part of somebody's estate. And there is this beautiful letter written on the back hard cover from a father to his son upon his birthday. And that's as valuable to me as the book is.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
Not because I'm voyeuristic, but because it imparts a degree of realness to it.
And also, the whole thing about books is that you can buy a book and find notes and annotations, and it all adds to the whole experience of the book.
Yeah, it's the real definition of value added.
Right, and so there's no way that can be replicated in this digitalized environment which they're trying to shove down our throats. And I mean, I sound crazy because I'm getting a master's in this bullshit. So that's why it's doing my head in, Bob, because I'm finding out way too much.
Oh God, that's great. The
library is in serious risk, and they're trying to flob off this Wowser information architecture stuff as the replacement. But I can't sit next to a 80-year-old online like I can at my local library. You understand what I'm saying?
Bingo.
I can't see a little 9-year-old. You know, and no. So don't talk to me about how this is going to replace that whole experience. But anyway, you know.
And then you come here and we have the same discussion. That's got to be great for your head.
Oh, no, it's fine. At this point, it's better than talking about, the sort of anemic and disgusting politics that are going on right now.
You know, speaking of which, why in God's name is CNN airing Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachman?
Well, I don't even understand. So why do they have to have two people? They have that horrible, insipid Ryan person who gives me the creeps.
You know how sick he is?
I can't deal with it. Yeah, well, what's the latest?
He requires all of his... If you are hired onto Paul Ryan's staff, job one is you must read Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, and you know, how puerile and immature is this? Are you kidding me? That's a huge worry.
He gives Atlas Shrugged away as gifts.
Now, that's what you read when you're 15 and you're a selfish MF-er, Bob. You know?
All too true.
I wouldn't read that shit when they were teenagers.
And yeah, you take the highlighter to the pages with the really badly written sex scenes in it. Sure, I was 15 once.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, it's sort of standard fare.
She sighed and cried out like a tigress. Jesus.
Anyway, I don't know why I'm surprised. That seems really...
But here's the fun part. There have been two posts in the last 2 days, they both hit on the same day more or less, about Ayn Rand. And they both contained a nugget of information that should be taken to heart by everybody who ever thought that miserable old bat had anything to offer whatsoever. Now, you know, she was the mother of objectivism, which is basically just some sort of dressed-up selfishness.
Yeah.
She also bastardized Adam Smith and took out all the ennobling stuff. And I guess we could have an argument about whether there's ennobling stuff in The Wealth of Nations, but there certainly is in the rest of the body of his work. And she took all of Adam Smith that she liked and threw everything else away and added a big old horse gag and dose of selfishness and called it objectivism and had people falling all over themselves to get to her, right? When she first came to America, she said the most inspiring thing she'd ever seen was a skyscraper because it represented the sum total of the will to power of man.
Oh, God. You know, another person who is misinterpreting Nietzsche, too. That poor man gets such a bad wrong for that. But anyway, that's yet another discussion we can have.
Okay, so there's all of that crap. And in 1968, she... just lung cancer. And had surgery. And survived.
Survived, huh?
Yeah. And in 1974, not under her own name, but under her husband's name, she and her husband applied for and received Social Security and Medicare.
Well,
and that's the end of Ayn Rand as far as I'm concerned.
But see, all those people are the same. I'm really twisted by these Republicans who are now, you know, pushing this means testing bullshit by starting with the rich people. You know, they're trying to fool everybody, and it's a plan that could easily work. You know, when they start talking like that, but it is part of a I don't know how many four prong attack on the whole program. God, it's horrible. But that Rand, so what? When did you read that post? I mean, I'm not too surprised, but that must be a
yesterday.
Bit damning. That must be a bit damning to the cause, no?
Oh, well, no, because hypocrisy only works on people who have consciences and senses of shame. You cannot shame the shameless. And so, you know, they're well, you're a liberal. You're in favor of it. Why would you be mad at her for taking it? You want her to have it.
Okay, well, listen, wow, that's incredible. So this guy who they vested all this power in requires his staffers to read that?
Yes.
Oh, God, you know. I mean, I would be more impressed if he had him read, you know, Leo Strauss or something a bit more...
Hell, even Milton Friedman.
Enlightening, but that's rubbish. Wow.
I mean, I hate Milton Friedman, but at least he was a legitimate scholar in his field.
Well, I'm not a big fan of Strauss either. That shit is frightening, but it's, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It has some.
But she, you know, she's just a bad science fiction writer.
Yeah, no, that's why I threw L. Ron Hubbard. I'm throwing in that category for real.
Well, she really is, and there's been a dodge. But see, the thing is. The difference between L. Ron Hubbard and Ayn Rand is that Ayn Rand's little cult has been much more financially successful.
Well, and also,
I mean, they've got a guy in Congress running the budget in the House of Representatives now. On the other hand, the Scientologists have Tom Cruise dancing on Oprah's couch. Who's succeeding?
Well, Yeah, no, the Ayn Rand thing is very disturbing, but it just sort of, you know, appeals to the sort of mean harshness of this society anyway. So, I mean, it's not terribly surprising, but see, I'm more interested in his response almost than Obama at this point, because he's dark, that Ryan, very dark sort of plans. You know,
I know what you're talking about, and I'm sort of the same way. It's like, I got a pretty good idea for what we're going to get out of President Obama, and it's going to be in many, you know, the 5-year spending freeze. That's a right wing wet dream.
No, that's incredible.
How is Ryan going to stand up and say, "Well, that's not enough"?
Well, that's what they're going to do, though, and that's the problem with Obama. It's like, dude, you know, no matter what you do, it's never going to be enough, and he keeps doing, and you know, we're just getting annihilated here. No one should be talking about the whole cuts. I can't believe that he's fallen into that rut. It's incredible.
Well, the Think Progress guys published earlier today, Sandra, a list of some of the stuff that's been said about Social Security. John Boehner, we're all living a lot longer than anyone ever expected. The editors of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, that's who he said that to, in saying he wanted to raise the retirement age to 70. Johnny Isaacson of Georgia said it would painlessly change the program to raise the retirement age. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama, he said it would be a positive thing if the retirement age was raised. Mitch Daniels of Indiana, and then, of course, Senator Lindsey Graham Cracker said he wanted to adjust the age where people can get Social Security benefits. And you know, that's when he threatened to vote against raising the debt ceiling if he didn't get his way. Eric Cantor, Britney Spears fan, said, if we do not do something to extend the retirement age, the Social Security program will cease to exist.
No, but see, and I go back to 46% of Americans don't even know that the Congress has changed hands. And if you couple that with the huge corporate money, courtesy of those corrupt Supreme Court justices, they only need a small percentage. You see what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, what do you think? Of that 46%, Sandra, how many would you guess are teabaggers?
I don't know. I don't know. How many would you guess?
All of them. Because they're still... And that's really kind of a good thing, because that means that their throw-the-bums-out ire is still in play.
Well, and I also think that whole thing is in play. You're right about that. I mean, the sort of switcheroos that we've been having with these elections are, you know, that's unprecedented. But my worry is this Citizens United. It's not going to be altered. And I don't know about you, but I think it's just going to be a tidal wave of money for 2012.
Oh, yeah, they were just chumming the water in 2010. Citizens United money is going to be more than we've ever even imagined in 2012.
And so, I mean, a part of me, you know, just as far as just straight American politics, I definitely understand what Obama is doing, because he's looking at what we're looking at, this wash of money, and he's like, damn, there's no way I'm going to get reelected unless I, you know, capitulate all the time. But... You know what I'm saying? But that's just,
yeah.
And I understand it, but nevertheless, I can't condone it. I can't accept it, you know, because what's the point then, you know?
Well, and you know, here's one more little fun thing. I saw this happening this morning. CNN, for reasons that baffle me, when was the last time that you saw for-profit media outlets fawning and fumbling all over themselves to get some freshman senator on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Never.
Is that what's going on?
Yeah, they were about to just, you know, have a little sexual moment, because they were going to interview freshman Senator Rand Paul, you know, libertarian ophthalmologist.
Oh no! Yeah, I mean, it's just
so they had him. Yeah, they had him on CNN, Sandra, and you know, he wanted to make sure that he got his great ideas, because he's a man of ideas, Sandra. And he said, "This is what the Aqua Buddhist said." We do have separate plans for reforming specifically Social Security. You know, we, him and that mouse in his pocket.
Wow.
You can fix the Social Security shortfall by raising the age by 1 month every year. So it'll take 36 years to raise the Social Security age 3 years. I think we as a society can handle that. It fixes most of the problem. The bill can be one page long. They're all into these one-page bills now. We raise the age by 1 month every year. That's what we did in the 1980s when Ronald Reagan passed Social Security reform. If you do that, you fix the majority of the problem. We're all living longer lives, and I think the American people now, more than any other time, are ready to face this problem.
I know, but see, that's that bubble again, because who's living longer lives?
Yeah, it ain't the janitor. It's not the guy. It's not the guy who's mowing grass at 63.
And when you got 50 million and growing with people who can't get access to health care, you ain't going to have no lifespan for too long, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just incredible. It's, yeah, and they're really pushing this. So, like.
Well, maybe that's the real key to solvency. If they raise the age and nobody's able to collect, it'll get real solvent real quick.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's incredible. And so, you know, we've been told that he's not going to talk about Social Security, but. Hey, I don't know until the speech is over with. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yeah, but the other thing is the math is kind of crazy here coming out of the Aqua Buddhist. He says it'll take 36 years to raise the Social Security age 3 years, but he wants to get to 70. Did I miss something? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it's all Jim.
What happened to 65? What happened to 62?
I mean, all of it's just gibberish. And I mean, I heard, you know, every year they raise it, it's like a 6 to 7% cut in benefits. So it's a huge cut that they're talking about if they raise the.
Right, and the beautiful thing is, anybody who understands the division of fractions understands that you can never divide a fraction down to zero. You know, if you cut it by half, you cut a half by a half, you get a quarter. You cut a quarter by a quarter, you get an eighth. You get 16ths, 32nds, 64ths, 128ths, 256ths, onward and onward and onward. But it never gets to zero. So the Republicans can credibly claim we are not trying to eliminate Social Security.
Listen,
you know, with their hand on the Bible.
No, but
it's crazy making.
Between the age raising and the means testing. Any of those, either one of those two get a foothold, along with Obama's reduction in the payroll tax, you know, it's well on its way to being completely destroyed. So I'm really curious.
Yeah, but my question, Sandra, and, you know, we talked about this last night. When is somebody on our side going to get the stones or the gumption or whatever we want to call it to stand up, look a camera in the eye, and say, watch real closely, I'll talk slow. It's all this talk about raising the age and cutting benefits, it's all founded on a lie. They are lying when they say Social Security is not solvent. It is a lie.
I know, well, Reed took a stab at it, but I haven't heard from him since. I was quite taken aback and pleasantly surprised. He came out pretty strong.
Yeah, that was 60 Minutes, and boom, that never got her. You know, and you know, Texas Betsy's reminding me, Bernie Sanders says that all the time.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. But Obama ain't saying it, though, which is, you know, what I'm looking at. Why isn't he, you know?
Right.
What does he have to lose by saying that in light of these polls that we were talking about? There's no reason for him not to come out strong on it. You know what I'm saying? In his State of the Union address, should be talking like that, not having us out here on eggshells wondering, oh, my God, right?
You know, it's kind of sad. I've gotten to see, the Republicans want to get the rest of us to this place where I am now. I have given up. I have given up on the notion that I am ever going to collect Social Security. Not because it's insolvent, not because the problem is flawed and failure prone, but because I am utterly convinced that on the one hand the Republicans are dedicated like a religious issue, they are dedicated to destroying it, and I am equally convinced that the Democrats lack the stern stuff of character to stand up to them and tell them that they can't.
Yeah. No, I understand. I mean, but I don't want to be in a position where we're just like, oh, I guess we'll see, you know, meek.
No. I will go down screaming.
Yeah, I mean, it just has to be an issue that people have to stand up for in whatever way they can. And, you know, the only upside to this is that it does seem like people are sort of working past the Kabuki Theater because they can't get any traction on getting rid of the program. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Right, and meanwhile, you know, here there's that story you sent me about Obama, the sentence that got me started this evening. Obama is under pressure from the public and lawmakers to cut spending.
Yeah, right. No, it's incredible. You know,
God damn the lies. Because that's what it is.
Well, listen, I'll let you go, but I must mention the Jay Cutler story. Now that fool is walking up the stairs.
Yeah, you see, he is not in a happy place right now.
What's happening? I'm like, damn, dude. I don't know. I just saw that story in Yahoo. I thought, oh, wow. He took the stairs, and they're all, like, upset and incensed. So you think they're going to try to bounce him? It looks bad.
Well, did you hear about the guy, the car salesman in Chicago today? He showed up for work on Monday wearing his Packers tie. They didn't waste any time. They just fired him.
Oh, they fired. That's right. Yeah, I saw that. Ooh. And, you know, you're killing me with the Taco Bell meat. Damn, that's gross. Okay?
It's disgusting.
You know?
And I think about all the times that I've eaten that stuff.
Yeah, no, I can. Yeah, I mean, I sort of shied away from fast food over the last couple of years.
Well, I have, too. And then for me, that means no Arby's, no McDonald's, no Wendy's, no none. But I figure I ought to be at least safe going with a beef and bean burrito. How much can you screw one of those up? Well, apparently a lot.
It's just nowhere left as far as fast food.
And okay, well, let me ask you the question of the night then before you go, because I got no answer. In that ingredient list, we list salt twice. We list onion powder and tomato powder and garlic powder and chili powder. We list beef broth. What's left for natural flavors? What are those natural flavors that aren't onion powder, chili powder, the tomato powder, garlic powder, beef broth, and salt?
I don't know. It's like the sort of, you know, when you read on the ingredients that they're bits that are taken apart by mechanical. I can't remember the exact. I don't know.
I mean, why not just put in place of that ubiquitous natural flavor, just put Soylent Green?
Yeah, and then when you said, oh, it could be downer beef, I was like, oh.
Well, that wasn't a joke.
Thanks for that. You know what I'm saying?
If you have ever eaten a can of Dinty Moore beef stew, Spam, no beef in Spam, but Dinty Moore beef stew, vegetable beef soup from Campbell's, any canned product that has beef in it, there is every chance in the world that you are eating downer cattle. Cattle that are so sick that they are unable to stand on their own. But the USDA and the FDA allow it to be processed and put into food for human consumption, especially food for children's school lunch programs, I might add.
And weak mothers, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, but it's allowed because the theory goes that it is cooked, and it is cooked at high enough temperatures that any mad cow would be killed. That's why we don't buy a lot of Dinty Moore anymore.
It's incredible. I'm still just reeling by how much of the food testing and whatever in this country is voluntary. And it's like, no wonder they have recalls every other day.
No. And again, these things are all coming out of central. Again, the idea of a capitalist economy is just a BS lie. This is a command economy, so Soviet flavored, because all the green beans come out of three plants. All the peanut butter comes out of three plants. All of the everything comes out of two or three plants in the United States, and it's just a matter of which labels get affixed to the cans and variations in the cooking recipe. And so when the green beans go bad, all the green beans go bad. Real interesting little tidbit before you go. You know, I go over and check on Tony Bourdain's blog from time to time because I'm a pitiful little fanboy.
Right.
And he's got a blog over there. And so I went there a couple of days ago, and lo and behold, he had written a letter in response to a blog entry. You know, this must be serious shit that he's responding to a blog entry. And so I went over and read the initial blog entry. And it was a blog entry from a girl who was a journalism student at the University of Missouri. In the, you know, the J school there is like the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote because she was put out by something that Tony Bourdain said in his book Medium Raw, and that's why we had him on the program to talk about the book, where he said that he was talking about the fact that Cargill produces its frozen meat patties with ammoniated beef. That's beef where all the pathogens have been killed by immersing it in an ammonia compound.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know what you're talking about.
And so he said that, you know, the head of Cargill should be kept in a cage and fed scrapings from the monkey floor. Something, you know, typical. And she was incensed because she happened to be the head of Cargill's head of Cargill's daughter. And she said, you know, I just don't think it's, and she told him about how, you know, we go to the farmer's market and yada, 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 and we live in Minneapolis and we eat lots of organic stuff and blah, 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 and my father is not a monster.
Okay, well, that's what she does. What's that have to do with her family's business?
Bingo. And so, you know, there was that response, and I just sat there and said, you know, the kid doesn't get it. And so I went over to the original thing and I posted this thing where I said, listen, honey, I said, here's a test. I'm going to patty you out a nice hamburger, and then I'm going to drop it in some poop. But wait, I'll soak it in ammonia. Want to eat it? No, but it's all clean now because because Cargill says it is. And the whole point was, you know, don't sit there and defend somebody because you love him. When because you don't have to eat the ammonia beef when the rest of us do.
Yeah, well, no, it's just it's just dripping of privilege and entitlement. God,
but ammonia, and see, again, it has to be ammoniated because the kill system is so vile, so filthy, so disgusting, and so nasty that it is physically impossible to keep freshly cut meat out of great vast puddles of cow shit. Yeah, that's enough to make me a vegetarian, too.
Oh, no. And so she was just sort of upset that someone would criticize her
practice. Daddy.
Daddy. Yeah. Yikes. Well, and the fact that these sort of people have the nerve to... Yeah, well, I guess she got set back a few then, huh?
My God, there were thousands of people.
That's what I'm saying. That's like, yeah, honey. Hello.
Yeah, don't screw with a guy with 20,000 Twitter followers.
Well, it's just kind of the attitude. Well, I mean, you know, it's so telling that she said they eat, I'm sure you eat, you know.
And they raise their own food in their garden and stuff. But the point's not that. The point is the kid whose only decent meal of the day, and I'm expanding on it here, his or her only decent meal of the day is the school lunch that he or she gets. That the right wing freaking despises, that Rush Limbaugh wants kids to dumpster dive instead of, remember that one?
Yeah.
And the only chance he's got at a decent meal, and the meat that's on it, likely comes from downer cattle. Or it's a piece of pizza with, with pizza meat topping on it.
I mean to laugh, but that's, yeah.
Because there's a big difference between pizza meat topping and pepperoni, and pizza topping and sausage, and pizza meat topping and hamburger.
Mm.
And it is manifestly cheaper, and therefore the people who produce pizza meat topping charge top dollar to the federal government. And, you know, what the hell, those poor children are going to eat it. They're lucky to have a meal in the first place, little ingrates.
Well, I mean, the whole free lunch program is like a subsidy for the agribusiness.
The whole idea of commodities, food stamps, was all born as an idea. USAID, you know, those bags of rice with in the burlap bags that say a loving gift of the people of the United States of America?
Yeah.
Those are farm subsidies. We weren't giving that stuff away to the starving world because we gave a rat's ass about the starving world. We gave it away because the government bought it, the surplus, from the farmers.
Yeah, same thing with the free lunch program.
Bingo! It's all that.
And so, in the right wing, yeah, it's incredible.
And then Michelle Bachmann has the nerve to say, my forebears didn't come here with their hand out.
No, but that bitch gets subsidy up the ass.
$250,000.
Yeah, $250,000, and she has no response to that, right? It's incredible.
Well, it's different. It's not the same. We must support our American family farmers. They are the background of America, backbone. You too, vote. Jesus.
Yeah, I guess she has that health care, too. I mean, come on. They're all so disgusting. Anyway, yeah, I guess I'll have to get myself, as I like to say, I got to get my mind right for this speechifying that's coming up.
Sit down and be quiet, citizen. Here's your Soylent Green.
Oh, God. Well, yeah.
And your Soma. Don't forget the Soma.
It is. I mean, it's not funny. I mean, it is sort of like that when you think about
it. It ain't sort of like it, Sandra.
Yeah, it is.
We live there.
Yeah, the taco. Oh, God.
No, we live on the corner of Orwell Avenue and the Brave New World Boulevard.
Yeah, and especially if you are low income, it's all over. You're so right about that.
Oh, and I got another blog to send you at some point. I ran across somebody who tweets called the Sexademic.
Oh no, I don't know that one.
And she, it was totally by accident. And she writes this amazing stuff about no pleasure for poor people. I mean, she's like, you know, a sex researcher, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she writes, and I just saw it, and I was like, whoa, you know. Apparently, a guy who self-defines as a pornographer was supposed to speak at some conference at Oregon State University. And he has since been disinvited because, well, you know, we're a state-sponsored university, and we can't use taxpayer dollars to pay a pornographer. But pornography's not illegal. And she's just got this running theme that'll blow your mind about how, and she incorporated this in the post. She said, you know, the right wingers wouldn't dare attack Harvard or Yale or Princeton or the Ivy League schools or Duke or Vanderbilt or Stanford for having a sex researcher who called himself a pornographer speak to a group. But by God, if it's a state school, oh yeah, because the elite aren't going to be educated at the state school. Those are going to be kids, you know, maybe the first kid in the family to go to college, and we can't have their eyes opened up to sexual literacy and sexual reality and sexual pleasure.
Well, it's the same thing with the state school, and if you, make two mistakes, you're out. I mean, it's the same kind of mentality, because I watched it, because I went to a state school, and I saw loads of people struggling along, working two jobs. You know, they miss a paper, and all of a sudden they on probation and out. So you're right about the sort of double standards.
And she's got, you know, she had another one, post called No Pleasure in the Hood.
Yeah.
You know, and I just read it, and wow, it just jumped all over me. It made tons of sense.
Okay, well, no, you need to send that to me, because I'm always...
Well, when you if you use TweetDeck, just in the little search box, just type Sexademic, Sexademic, like academic only, Sexademic.
Okay, no, I'm writing it down. Shut up, that's hilarious. Yeah, okay, I'll check that out. Anyway, so I'll definitely. You gonna be on tomorrow?
I hope I will be. I've got a late doctor's appointment that may knock me down though.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll catch up with you sometime this week. So we can, review.
Quiz on Friday.
Okay.
See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. God, I love how these conversations go all over the place. I got to get back to the Bradley Manning the con that's out there. Well, okay. No, it's not a con. It's just really, really disturbing. Suffice to say, caveat emptor. Let's see if this person has been patient enough to stay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I on?
You are on.
Wow. I've been on hold forever.
That happens sometimes.
Sandra. Well, that's okay. Well, I haven't been listening because I work late sometimes on Tuesday. And I turned it on. It was you and Sandra talking around 6:55 or whatever. But I just want to say, I love Sandra.
Everybody does. That's the thing. I think people like Sandra more than they do me. And that's okay.
If you get a sidekick, it needs to be Sandra, and you two can take callers. Awesome.
I hit the lottery. I hit the lottery. I'm mailing a check and the equipment to Sandra. You know, that's all.
Because I've always loved her from the first time I've heard her, and she's just so cool, and she's just.
Oh, I got it. I can be Howard Stern, and she can be Robin Quivers.
Yeah, but no.
No, because I don't have the hair.
Totally, you guys, no, but you're totally different than that. But you're on a whole different level that's unique.
Yeah, because I have actually never used the C word to describe Sarah Palin.
If you want to go with chemistry, maybe, but, you know, I wouldn't compare yourself with, you know, those two.
Oh, no, well, believe me, it's laughable when I think about my bank account. What bank?
Yeah, isn't it crazy that, you know, those kind of people can be rich and talk about all that ridiculous
stuff? No, Howard is massively talented. The reason
actually putting out intelligence and thought, get nothing. Yeah, but that's what the world's all about, you know. And when I originally called you, I forgot what I called about. But, you know, I'm thinking about the food.
Yeah, you want a taco? No.
But I stopped eating at Taco Bell like 4 or 5 years ago when the last two times that, like, people, you know, like sometimes at work, they're like, oh, we're going here for lunch. You want anything? And, you know, I'll get it. And it's like the last two times I ate there, I got so sick. I have never ate.
And that's the thing. That's the funny thing that happens, Ange. If you stay away from fast food for a while and then you eat it, your body immediately rebels against it.
Oh my God! But the taste is, because I remember when Taco Bell first came out, like I don't know, in the early '80s, when I was a kid. When I remember my mom and dad taking, let's go to this new place called Taco Bell. It was in Kansas City, and I remember it was kind of good. But somewhere along the line,
same thing happened. Same thing happened to me, Ange. When I was a little kid, late '70s, Huntsville, Alabama was 72 miles to the east of where I grew up, and we only went there once in a very great while. And I would, you know, if I was really good, I would be treated with a trip to what must have been one of the earliest Taco Bells in the history of humankind, and it was delightful. It was really yummy. And
they're like, oh, your taste has changed since then. It's like, no, it hasn't. They've done something different. And I know it's different. It's like, when you're a kid, when you're a kid, everything is bigger and everything tastes better. But it really hasn't. For one thing, okay, Kraft macaroni and cheese. When I was a little kid, you know, in the 70s or whenever, when my mom used to fix me macaroni and cheese, it was actually good, but somewhere along the line,
it turned into crap.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Look, Ange, it's all Soylent Green now. It is all Soylent Green.
It's disgusting. And you know what really...
Here's another one. While we're
disgusting, I went to the natural food store that we have. It's a co-op thing, and it used to be really tiny when I first moved here to Arkansas from Kansas City, and now it's become a bigger place, and they have this stuff called Back to Nature, and it's organic macaroni and cheese, and I bought some just to try it out. Oh my God, it reminded me of the taste that I used to, you know what I mean? I remember.
Yeah, it tasted like something besides boiled cardboard with Elmer's glue all cheese flavored wallpaper paste on it, right?
Yeah, it does.
Well, here, let me ruin another one for you, Ange. Ever go to Arby's?
Oh,
Here's a hint. Here's a hint. Okay. Okay.
Fast food places, because there's enough
Well, let me ruin Arby's for everybody.
Local little restaurants here that I.
Yeah. See, I do the same thing, but let me ruin Arby's for everybody. Here's a hint. Roast beef. There has never been a hunk of beef grow on a cow in the same shape as what they shave those roast beef sandwiches from. That thing is a baked, gelatinized mass of beef parts, ground up, pressed down, and shaken together, like the Bible says. And
It doesn't taste right. A lot of the foods doesn't taste right anymore. And you know the weird thing about it? I have a neighbor that just got a new roommate. She's a good friend of mine. She's from Russia. And she got a new roommate. And she's from a European country. And we were talking the other day, and we're talking about food and stuff. And she's like, a lot of the food here has no flavor, even the vegetables. And I'm like, yeah, I know. When you go to the regular grocery store to buy vegetables, even they don't taste right. And I told her, I said, if you want, you know, good vegetables, go to the farmer's market when it comes in the season, when they open up, you know, or buy something from the roadside, or, you know, go to the natural food store. It is a little bit more expensive, but, I mean, the food is just not right anymore. And, you know, we're talking about the age of people living longer. Okay, this really gets me. All these people worry about, oh, people are living too long. You know what? No one's going to live. Everyone's going to die pretty soon because this world is not sustainable for what's going on right now.
Oh, you win the toaster tonight, Ange.
All these rich, greedy, corporate bastards that have these trillions and trillions of dollars of screwing everybody over. You know what? Their great-great-great-grandchildren isn't even going to be around to have all that money. Because the humans are not even going to exist if the world keeps going the way it is. We're not sustainable at all because the world can't pump out all the resources as much as we're using them up. And, you know, that's the reality of it. That is the reality in...
And it has real-time, real-world dire consequences, Ange.
I know, and if people don't get educated in this, you know, it's like they're trying to brainwash people for their own little greedy, selfish needs, and these people are freaking psychotic. I think these people that are doing this are really psychotic. And
no, I mean, you know, Taco Bell.
Issues.
Well, we had somebody call from the UK once upon a time, who told us that they have to call it KFC in the UK. You know, KFC, because they're not allowed under UK law to refer to it as chicken because it cannot meet the definition of chicken.
Oh God, I stopped eating there like 10 years ago. Oh. A lot, and that's why I hate eating at fast food places.
And see, the thing is, they've got test kitchens, Ange, and the goal of the test kitchens is, they've got people standing around with little tasting spoons, and they stick it in their mouth, and they chew, and they masticate a little bit, and they spit it out, and the boss says, hey, did that taste like meat? Did that taste like it was all hamburger? And the taster goes, needed a little potassium stearate 972, I think. And, you know, Michael Pollan, who is such a brilliant writer, I received a copy of The Food Rules. And one of the rules is, if it wasn't on your grandmother's shelf, you don't want to eat it. And frankly, let's see, what was that? I still got the list here. I guarantee there's nobody who has any sodium phosphate or potassium lactate in their or even maltodextrin in their spice rack. So if it ain't in your spice rack, it probably ought not be in you.
Yeah. It should not be in anybody. And, you know, you're bringing this stuff up, and you were talking about, you know, Anthony Bourdain. I've been watching Anthony Bourdain way longer than I've been listening to you. And that's one of the reasons when I first started listening to you, like, 3 years ago or whatever, because I don't have cable. And how I got turned on to Anthony was at work. Because I work in a little local, little small family-owned business. It's really cool. But we have cable in our little kitchen lunch area. And one time at lunch, I was flipping, and I saw this guy. And I'm like, damn, you know? And he's really cool. And I thought it was really cool when I was, you know, was listening to you, and then one of your episodes, you talk about him. And I'm thinking about this one episode. I can't remember exactly, but he's somewhere in China. And he's at this restaurant that's been famous for 30 years or whatever, and I can't remember, somewhere in Asia. Can't remember exactly if it was Japan or Korea or somewhere. But this, like, famous restaurant, and this little old man, all the chicken that you eat there, he kills them that morning. And you're eating the freshest chicken that you can eat. And he's like, oh my God, this is so good. You know, people in America don't even know what they're missing. Because the flavor of a freshly killed animal, and I feel kind of murderous even saying this, but it's better flavor. It is.
Yes.
It's a better flavor, and it's fresh, and you know it's, as long as they're not feeding them, you know, weird stuff, and I doubt they are, it is great. You know, this guy's been, you know, making a living 30-some years for it, doing this, you know, just making it simple.
Because making it hard really has no purpose unless you're a giant corporation.
Unless you're a greedy bastard and one that, you know, you think more.
Well, you can say it that way too, yes.
People.
Yes.
You know, you think more of yourself and the future of, you know, all the devastation that's going on in the world rather than the humanity of it all, you know? I worked for Tyson's for 7 years. You're talking about Cargill? And I quit. I got called back.
Oh, that's another one of the heads of the seven-headed beast.
I got called back because they were desperate to find someone that knew flexography. You know, I've been a graphic artist since the late, and I was on the Mac in 1986, probably one of the first people I knew ever to touch that. And I got called back, and I couldn't even take it. 6 months later, I quit because it's like, this isn't worth it. I'd rather make less money and be happy with myself and be happy coming to work than work for, a place like that. And I kind of miss the flexography because I really like the math in it, man. I'm an artist, but I've always been good at math, and I don't know if anything about flexography printing, and there's offset printing. Flexography is on cylinders, and there's a lot of math in it. But, you know, and before I worked there, I worked at a chicken plant, because when I first moved here to Arkansas, there was no jobs, so I had to get a job, and I worked at a chicken plant, and then, you know, after a while, I kept bugging the print shop and putting in my resume and doing it. And finally, they gave me a job there. But I know a lot that, and I did corporate, and I know a lot of aspects of that place. And after 7 years, I couldn't take it anymore. You know? And when they called me back, it's like, and they offered me all this money, it's like, okay, I'll try it. But then after 6 months of that, I couldn't stand it. It's like, this is not worth it. I can't live with myself and, you know, deal with all the stress and everything.
Well, remember that guy who got treated like crap in a...
They don't
Angie, you remember that guy in Alabama a year and a half or 2 years ago who got treated like crap at a meat processing plant and just lost it and went postal?
Oh, man, I don't blame them because you know why? There's no unions here in Arkansas. And when I worked at the print shop, I used to do these newsletters for these different plants all around the United States. And, you know, sometimes they'd have like a birthday list or something, and I get all these big, gigantic printouts. And it showed me the people's name and the birthdays, but it showed me a lot of other stuff, like how long they worked there, how much money they made now. And some of these people that worked there weren't getting paid anything. And it just freaked me out. You know, I wasn't even really getting paid much. But, you know, to think of the... Because I knew people in Kansas City that was working for Swift Eckrich in the late 80s that worked there 2 or 3 years, and they were making good money because they had unions there.
Makes all the difference in the world.
And then people around here... We don't need a union. You know why? Because they don't understand what a union's all about. They've been taught, and there's all these commercials about, no, we don't, you know, they're trying to steal from us. But they're not just trying to steal from you, from the individual. They're just taking more money away from the bastard that makes all the money. That's all they're doing. And it just pisses me off. It really does. That these people, you know, working at a chicken plant is not...
See, I can't imagine that because PETA snuck some cameras into a chicken plant here in West Virginia 4 or 5 years ago, and they got these horrific videos of the workers there, non-union, of course, stomping chickens, throwing them, slamming them, body slamming them into the walls, yanking their beaks out. Just disgusting.
Because
the whole operation was sadistic. It was that whole, you know, they had become the prison guards in that famous psychological experiment. They had lost their humanity. Well, Angie, I got to roll along, but
around it so long, you know.
Right. It destroyed their souls, or what passes for one. I got to roll on, but it's awful good talking to you, dear.
Hey, yeah, I was going to say more, but I'll let you go. I'll do it next time.
All right. There'll be a next time, I assure you.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to your next caller.
All right. See ya. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Ange calling from Arkansas. I cannot for the life of me imagine what it would be like to work for Tyson. And, hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Tony. What's up, man?
I'm good. Hey, can we keep talking about food?
Or things that aren't food but are passed off as same?
Yeah.
See, I got a feeling that that breakfast burrito still lives in my memory out in Vegas. And I got a feeling there was no... where's my list again? I got a feeling there was no isolated oat product in that burrito you brought me.
Oh, absolutely nothing. It's all
no fresh. Tomato powder.
No, it was all... Everything was definitely fresh and nothing... There was no food... additives or anything. It was all natural.
No, that was pure Yum. The real kind, not Yum brands.
Can we talk about Anthony Bourdain for a second?
We sure can.
You know, it's funny, on our day-to-day lives, I don't know how you live your life, but, you know, you don't have a lot of time, so basically it's a fast food thing. So when you watch his show, or even Andrew Zimmer, or even Man vs. Food, when you watch his show, now maybe Man vs. Food is comfort food, and they don't... you know, soak the steak.
No, Man versus Food makes me want to vomit, Tony.
No, but what I'm saying is, yeah, it makes me want to vomit, but even his favorite meat is pork, right?
Oh, well, that and sea urchin roe.
Yeah, but pork, for right?
Yeah.
So he breaks out these pork dishes, and even I go, oh, crud. I'm looking at him, and I'm going,
I can't have that.
I can't have that, but I wish I could. But... Yeah, well, I think what it is we're so conditioned to eat cup of noodles and instant this or potato chips or instant that when you see that kind of food, it triggers something in your brain and you go, Man, I wish I could have that.
Right, and see, the thing I love about Bourdain, Tony... Wow, that's funny how that worked out. The thing I love about Bourdain is that it's not about sitting down to a seven-course meal on, you know, fine china with the shrimp fork and all of that crap.
Yeah.
He's as happy as a clam standing there eating from a street food vendor.
That's
where the great stuff is. I mean, to this day, if you said, you know, Bob, we're going to have a hamburger, where do we go? You know, I'll tell you that we'll go down to a little hole in the wall in East Florence, Alabama, called Staggs's Grocery, that's only open till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we'll get the hamburger of all hamburgers there. None better.
Because with Bourdain, yes, it's the food, but it's the atmosphere. I think I might have told you that I've been to Europe. Have I told you that?
No.
Okay. I've been to Europe. I have friends that live in Austria. One of the greatest meals I ever had, because it's all about the atmosphere with Bourdain, is I sat down with my friend and about four or five of his friends, and we had a dinner. And you know those kind of dinners where you laugh and talk and it goes on for like 5 or 6 hours, and every now and then you eat a piece of food or this and that, or you drink some wine or something, and you just keep on laughing and it goes into the night and you have a great time? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well, you can't. That's the atmosphere that Bourdain brings to it, because everything he does is like, it's so relaxed. You're meeting the people, you're eating the food, and the food has a special taste to it because it's all part of the atmosphere. You're soaking in everything, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. Because that's another thing that contributes to our national obesity problem, our national diabetes problem, is that we don't know how to sit down and enjoy a meal anymore. And we think that the automobile is a natural place to eat. You know, for years and years and years, the rap on Mercedes-Benz, Tony, was, well, they ain't got no cup holders. I don't want no Porsche. It ain't got no cup holder.
That's because you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to be drinking in the car, not even pop, not even water. You know, in the German ideal of, you know, Farfignugen, you're supposed to be experiencing, having an intimate experience with the brilliant Teutonic engineering going on under your hood and passing through to the drivetrain, and you don't even need a stereo because you're listening to that brilliant thrum of the power coursing through. Yeah.
Getting, you're definitely right. Getting back to Bourdain, but you're right. Those street food ones, those are the best because it's simple.
Well, and the thing is, we're stopping, we've got like 10 hours in Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah?
And none of the excursions look particularly fun. So what I'm thinking I want is, I want to just walk around, and I want to have some sure enough, street food in San Juan.
That's cool. Can we change subject for a second?
We can. I don't know how much good it'll do because I just lost my internet connection.
How much time do you have left?
We got about 10 minutes.
Okay.
8 minutes.
Getting back to going on another subject, Oberman. Is he? Have you heard anything about that today, or what's going on?
Mainly just watching his tweets.
Okay, so what has he been tweeting lately? Because I haven't been paying attention to
him. Well, the best one was fairly recent, and he said something about, the senators are marching across the hall to the House chamber. I guess that means there's no chance this damn thing's going to be canceled.
Oh, you know what I read? I read somewhere that apparently, I might be wrong, and I don't know all the details, but somebody might want him to run for Lieberman's...
Yeah, that's a non-starter. Ain't going to happen.
It's a non-starter. It's not going to happen, okay? Because I thought maybe... I thought maybe that was going to happen. So, you know, do you think he's going to go to the web? I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
Well, you know, he's joking about FOK, Friends of Keith, and the Fox News Network.
That'd be funny.
I think he'll do something. See, he's allowed to do radio and internet.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see his the most manifestations of his presence will probably be on the internet.
Okay, so he's gone. Any care to guess a wager how long before Maddow's out of there too?
Not sure. I think you'll see a change of tone with Comcast coming in before anybody's actually gotten rid of. And I would bet, from the last in, first out, last hired, first fired theory. The next two to go would be Cenk and Ed.
Well, I mean, Ed, I can take or leave personally. I really don't think, you know, Ed is Ed. But I like Cenk because, for lack of a better word, he kind of brings a sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for, youthful enthusiasm. You know, he seems a little more, he can, you know, contact, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, touch the young people. Because just the way he talks and, you know, the whole, I don't know if you ever watched this Young Turks podcast.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've met him a couple of times.
Is he a nice guy?
Yeah, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like it. Have you ever met Anna?
Who? No.
His co-brother? Okay. So when are you leaving again?
A week from Friday.
Oh, so not this Friday, but next Friday.
Right, a week from this Friday.
Are you gonna do a show Thursday?
Probably. No. I'm going to say that right now. I will not do a show the Friday before we leave because we have to leave at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'll be in bed at like 6 at night.
Okay, so you're not going to do one Thursday either, correct?
Right.
So, is Agnes excited?
Oh, she's vibrating. Tony from Vegas just asked, "Is Agnes excited?"
Agnes is very excited.
Agnes, when are we going to see the happy dance on the website?
Oh, yeah, they want to see the Agnes happy dance on the website. I have to YouTube you doing the happy dance. Preferably on the beach with a coconut shell beverage of your choice with an umbrella sticking out of it and a straw.
You got to put the happy dance on it. So are you going to... If you don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but what... liner are you, what service are you taking, like Song of Norway?
No, it's, you can look it up and see all about it. It's the Holland America line. If you just go and, well, you can click on the link at Malloy's website, or you can go just Google Holland, Google Progressive Voices Cruise, and you can see all about it.
Okay, now, we can't stand you being away, so we don't know what we're going to do. So
well, John Fox is going to try to cover some of those nights.
I know, but now that I know the ship you're going on, I'm going to call a couple of my Afghan brothers, and we're going to make sure that ship never reaches port.
you're vile.
We're going to make sure that ship...
My first vacation in 12 flipping years.
Yeah, well, I'll fix that. I'm just playing.
Yeah, I know. No. It's set a course for Mumbai.
Mumbai, yeah. We're going to Mumbai, Bob. We're going to take a little detour. Hey, listen, if I don't hear from you again before you leave, I hope you have a great time. And is Agnes still in the room?
She is, but she can't hear anything.
Well, just tell her I said hi and I hope she enjoys herself.
Oh, okay. Tony says hi and hope you enjoy yourself.
Hi, Tony. We send love.
Oh, take care and have fun. And I'm glad you're feeling better and I'm glad you're over your sickness. And take care of Bob. Don't let him die because we need him.
She won't. Okay, she won't.
I'll see you. See you, Bob.
All right. Later, Tony.
Bye.
Tony calling from Vegas. It's about 6 minutes before the hour. I'm sorry about the internet outage there. 1 minute I was broadcasting, the next minute... I'd really love to know why that happens.
Campbell soup cans and yarn.
Dented tomato cans and string. Not even sisal hemp. It's probably polyester. Oh, there was a popped pee. Let's see. While the internet was being busy going down, the production computer also crashed. And I've only got a couple of minutes, and it's very important to me that I do address this one issue. Because I mentioned it talking to Sandra. And again, I don't just goon on people to be gooning on people. That's not the way I operate. But this thing was so disturbing when I read it this morning, I thought, I don't want anybody to get hurt. I don't want anybody to get conned. I don't want anybody doing something and then thinking they'd done one thing and wound up doing another. It's about 5 minutes before 9. You know what? I'll save it till tomorrow. I will. There's not time enough to do it justice, and I'm having a hell of a time getting a machine back up. So we'll just call it quits. By the way, thank you. Thank you to the one very kind individual, you know who you are, who during the program stepped up and filled in 20 slots out of the 45 needed from the nifty 250. And thank you all to the person who stepped in and filled in another slot as well. We can't get by. We can't get along. This can't happen without that your kind of dedication. It simply cannot. So thank you. So it's kind of cool to be able to say that if we have, between now and Friday, if we bring in $240, we have made our fundraising for the entire month of January before January ended. What a way to begin a new year. And that is no joke. No joke. So $240 between now and Friday, it'll be really, really good news. I'm not sure how he's going to handle it, but the Rick Smith Show is on the way from Pennsylvania. Stick around for that. If you can't listen to Rick live, by all means, get his podcasts from WhiteRoseSociety.org. You will find to be true what I have said, that he is one of the best of the new crop of liberal talkers out there, period, bar none. Please do check him out. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. First of all, you, who contribute your ideas, your thoughts, your phone calls, your participation in the chat room, your everything, as well as your financial support. Thank you. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. My head writer, David in Tennessee, has had the last couple of nights off. I hope he's enjoying himself. Everybody needs a break now and then. Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com is our Southeast correspondent. He is doing great work, as noted earlier in the program. Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy, is our op-ed columnist at headonradionetwork.com. He'll be along with us. The program also happens every night because of the continuing support of the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.